Hello, this is Terry Burdick greeting to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for Saturday and Sunday, February 7th and 8th. We'll start today, as always, on our front page. We'll work our way through the paper with our local news first, ending with whatever's going on in sports, and we'll take a break at the midpoint to talk about our obituaries that have been received as of Friday evening. We'll start today with news on our front page. Hopeston Hospital upgrades helipad. This article comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski. Dateline Hopeston. In an emergency, every second counts. One local hospital will provide faster care with a new addition. Recently, the Carl Hopeston Regional Health Center received an upgrade to their helipad and are now able to take patients to flight from their emergency care center where seconds matter to save lives. Heather Tucker, DNP RNBC, administrator of Hopeston Regional Health Center, said the first flight took off from the new location on December 21st. It was a night flight, and that was our first transfer from that new helipad, Tucker said. One of the other benefits, obviously, is that the lights automatically come on. It's more current with safety standards and awareness. Tucker said prior to the upgrade, they had to turn on the lights for the helipad manually. Hopeston Regional Health Center is getting a helipad spot closer to their emergency services with AirLife. It's more efficient, and that is a priority in saving lives, and time is of the essence, she said. We want the patient at number one priority for outcomes, and we want the very best outcomes for our patients, and our goal is to get them to advanced care in a more timely fashion. Riley Stebbins, BSN RN manager for the clinical operations at Hopeston Regional Hospital Healthcare, said this closer access is critical and essential. The addition of our new helipad is a major step forward for our hospital and our community. In a rural setting like ours, minutes matter. Our new helipad allows us to get critically ill and injured patients to higher levels of care faster, improving outcomes and saving lives, said Stebbins. Hopeston Regional Healthcare acquired a helipad in the 1960s and later partnered with Carle Health in 2021. Most recently, the hospital received $100,000 in funding, sponsored by State Senator Chapin Rose, and about $200,000 from the Charlotte Ann Russell Charitable Trust. Carolyn Gordon, Carle Health Public Relations Manager, said the organization was very helpful for the funding that was made available. Tucker said that trust is something they can count on to help each other. We receive a gift from trust on an annual basis, and it typically averages in the $200,000 range, Tucker said. So between those two gifts that we received that help support the development and construction of this new helipad. The funding sponsored by Rose comes from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. AirLife helps provide a bridge between critical access hospitals in rural areas and facilities where additional care is provided. So we're grateful to make that transition for the patient that much easier with a new helipad, Tucker added. To learn more about AirLife and other emergency responses at Carle Health, visit carle.org. Continuing with our front page news, Danville firefighters wait on agreement with the city, again by reporter Christy Jankowski. Dateline Danville. Danville firefighters are still waiting on a collective bargaining agreement with the city. During Tuesday's public comment section of the council meeting, Danville Firefighters Local 429 President Easton Hoskins spoke out about the stalled agreement. On December 19th, our membership voted to ratify in good faith, said Hoskins. Since that vote, however, the agreement has seen no action by the city council. Hoskins added the agreement was supposed to be on the January meeting, but it was pulled at the last minute. Since then, it has not appeared on the last two city council agendas, and no explanation has been provided to our members, Hoskins said. Our firefighters upheld their end of the process. They participated, negotiated, and voted. Refusing to bring this agreement forward for a vote is unfair to our members and undermines the collective bargaining agreement. Since then, Alderwoman Tricia Teague asked after the public comment section about the agreement. I also remember when it was pulled, but also, if I recall, we were going to get a copy of it to review, she asked. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. addressed Hoskins and Teague's questions, stating, as I sent out to you in an email, there were some issues that need to be addressed and we're working on correcting them. Williams said on Friday, by the first meeting of next month, there will be a vote. An agreement between the City of Danville Fire Department and the Danville Area Community College Nursing Program was also approved. Voya Financial was chosen as the record keeper for the deferred compensation plan, and a resolution to add the DCEO grant for capital improvements was also approved, as were the disposal of a police vehicle and the authorization of the Illinois Law Enforcement 15C Training and Standard Board's Law Enforcement Camera Grant. The city parking agreement with Vermilion County was also approved. Dave Rue, Public Works Director, said the agreement was standard, with the only change from the county being a 2-year agreement to a 5-year agreement. Our final article on the front page today comes with the headline, Medicare is experimenting with having AI review claims, a cost-saving measure that could risk denying needed care. This comes to us from Grace McElby, who is a research scientist of health policy and economics at the University of Southern California, and Jeff Marr, an assistant professor of health services policy and practice at Brown University. It also comes with this comment. The Conversation is an independent and nonprofit source of news, analysis, and commentary from academic experts. Grace McElby, University of Southern California, and Jeff Marr, Brown University, The Conversation. Medicare has launched a 6-year pilot program that could eventually transform access to health care for some of the millions of people across the U.S. who rely on it for their health insurance coverage. Traditional Medicare is a government-administered insurance plan for people over 65 or with disabilities. About half of the 67 million Americans insured through Medicare have this coverage. The rest have Medicare Advantage plans administered by private companies. The pilot program, dubbed the Wasteful and Inappropriate Service Reduction Model, is an experimental program that began to affect people enrolled in traditional Medicare from 6 states in January of 2026. During this pilot, medical providers must apply for permission or prior authorization before giving 14 kinds of health procedures and devices. The program uses artificial intelligence software to identify treatment requests it deems unnecessary or harmful and denies them. This is similar to the way many Medicare Advantage plans work. As health economists have studied Medicare and the use of AI in prior authorization, we believe this pilot could save Medicare money, but it should be closely monitored to ensure that it does not harm the health of patients enrolled in the traditional Medicare program. Prior authorization. The pilot marks a dramatic change. Unlike other types of health insurance, including Medicare Advantage, traditional Medicare generally does not require healthcare providers to submit requests to Medicare to authorize the treatments they recommend to patients. Requiring prior authorization to these procedures and devices could reduce wasteful spending and help patients by steering them away from unnecessary treatments. However, there is a risk that it could also delay or interfere with some necessary care and add to the paperwork providers must contend with. Prior authorization is widely used by Medicare Advantage plans. Many insurance companies hire technology firms to make prior authorization decisions for their Medicare Advantage plans. Pilots are a key way that Medicare improves its services. Medicare tests changes on a small number of people or providers to see whether they should be implemented more broadly. The 6 states participating are Arizona, New Jersey, Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, and Washington. The 14 services that require prior authorization during this pilot include steroid injections for pain management and incontinence control devices. The pilot ends December of 2031. If the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which administers Medicare, deems the pilot successful, the Department of Health and Human Services could expand the program to include more procedures and more states. Introducing a hurdle. This pilot isn't changing the rules for what traditional Medicare covers. Instead, it adds an extra hurdle for medical providers before they could administer, for example, arthroscopic treatment for an osteoarthritic knee. If Medicare issues a denial rather than authorizing the service, the patient goes without the treatment unless their provider files an appeal and prevails. Medicare has hired tech companies to do the work of denying or approving prior authorization requests with the aid of artificial intelligence. Many of these are the same companies that do prior authorizations for Medicare Advantage plans. The government pays the companies a percentage of what Medicare would have spent on the denied treatments. This means companies are paid more when they deny more prior authorization requests. Medicare monitors the pilot program for inappropriate denials. What to watch for? Past research has shown that when insurers require prior authorization, the people they cover get fewer services. This pilot is likely to reduce treatments and Medicare spending, though how much remains unknown. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services chose the services targeted by the pilot because there is evidence they are given excessively in many cases. If the program denies cases where a health service is inappropriate or of low value for a patient's health, people enrolled in traditional Medicare could benefit. But for each treatment targeted by the pilot, there are some cases where that kind of health care is necessary. If the program's AI-based decision method has trouble identifying these necessary cases and denies them, people could lose access to care they need. The pilot also adds to the paperwork that medical providers must do, and paperwork is already a major burden for providers and contributes to burnout. Continuing with news of local interest, methamphetamine dealer sentenced to a decade in prison, and this was a special article to the Commercial News. On February 3, 2026, Kyle Blackburn, day of birth 10/23/85, formerly of Danville, Illinois, pleaded guilty to methamphetamine delivery, a Class 1 felony, and was sentenced to 10 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Following his term of imprisonment, Blackburn will serve 1 year of mandatory supervised release. The plea and sentencing were presided over by Judge Karen Wall. The people presented evidence that on November 22, 2024, Kyle Blackburn was stopped for a violation of the Illinois Vehicle Code and was arrested for driving while license suspended. Subsequently, officers searched the vehicle and located over 5 grams of methamphetamine, a scale, and small baggies. Blackburn admitted to police that he'd been driving another individual around to sell the methamphetamine. State Attorney Jacqueline Lacey said, "I'd like to thank the Danville Police Department for removing another methamphetamine dealer from our streets. The sentence in this case should serve as a clear reminder that we will continue our work with the police to stop drug trafficking in order to protect our community." Before we turn our attention to our obituaries and death notices that were received on Friday, let's take a look at the Christie Clinic Athletes of the Week, proudly honoring our high school athletes in the Ileana area. For the gentlemen, we have Matthew Darling. Westville coach Matthew Darling reached, Westville senior Matthew Darling reached the 1,000-point mark of his career on Tuesday with 24 points in a 69-24 win over Oakwood. And for our ladies, Jada Bell. Danville junior Jada Bell had 23 points in a 62-58 win over Champaign Centennial and had 15 points in a 43-39 win over Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin. We take a moment to salute our Student Athletes of the Week. If you have a student you'd like to submit, send an email to sports@dancomnews.com. Congratulations. Well, we're a little early, but let's take a look at our obituaries today. We have three. Lola Jean Kraft. Lola Jean Kraft, 97 of Danville, went home to Jesus at 8:20 p.m. on Sunday, February 1st at her home with her family. Per Jean's wishes, she'll be cremated and will be given a new body in heaven. A memorial service to celebrate the life of Jean Kraft will be held at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, February 11th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Pastor Doug Knapp will officiate. Burial will follow at Hicks Cemetery in Perrysville, where she'll be laid to rest next to her husband, Eugene. Family and friends are also invited to say goodbye during visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service on Wednesday, also at Sunset in Danville. Shirley V. Gonzalez. Shirley Hawkins Gonzalez died on January 31st at Hawthorne Inn in Danville of natural causes. The family would like to thank the staff at Hawthorne Inn for their compassion and comprehensive care. A service to celebrate the life of Shirley Gonzalez will be held at 3 p.m. on Friday, March 20th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A private interment will be held at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Jerry Joan Livingston. Jerry Joan Livingston, age 92 of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, February 3rd at Goldwater Care of Danville. A service to celebrate the life of Jerry Livingston will be held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, February 15th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Pastor Phil Miller will officiate. She'll be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park, and visitation will be held from noon to 2 prior to the service on Sunday, also at Sunset in Danville. Memorials in her name may be made to the American Heart Association or a charity of the donor's choice. And that concludes our reading of today's obituaries. Well, let's turn our attention to our editorials today. We have a guest columnist, Kevin Cullen, with the headline, A Look Back at Vermilion County in 1926. In 1926, Vermilion County marked its 100th birthday with a multifaceted, over-the-top celebration that lasted 3 full days. All this year, activities are scheduled to mark the county's bicentennial, which happens to coincide with the nation's 250th birthday. Most people in 2026 can't imagine life as was lived in 1926. Granted, there were no computers, interstate highways, TV sets, or knee replacement surgeries. But in town, at least, there was central heat, electric lights, hospitals, paved streets, retail stores, upholstered furniture, telephones, recorded music, groceries, movies, passenger trains, washing machines, automobiles, radios, anesthesia, indoor plumbing, and most of the 1,001 luxuries that we consider essential. But imagine someone in 1926 trying to place themselves in Vermilion County in 1826. He'd struggle to picture himself living in a dirt-floored cabin that was stifling in summer and freezing in winter, facing Indians and disease, forever hauling water, chopping wood, and feeding fires, tending livestock and vegetables, never seeing the inside of a church, library, or school. It was a place of dim candlelight, impossibly slow travel, very few people, and news, in air quotes, that arrived weeks or months after the fact. There was plenty to celebrate in Vermilion County during the centennial celebration of September 1926, and the 128-page centennial book detailed the exciting events. In anticipation of the bicentennial, I wrote about them in a 2021 column. Tuesday, September 28, 1926, began with a military salute, then an old settlers' reunion in the Illinois National Guard Armory on Hazel Street. 4 band concerts, followed by a speech by Roy O. West, a Georgetown native, who was then secretary of the Republican National Committee. That afternoon, there were more free concerts, displays of historic artifacts in downtown store windows, and a pioneer-themed parade with marchers and floats. That evening, the public was invited to a historical pageant at the fairgrounds featuring a cast of 700. That's right, 700. The highlight, I suspect, was the arrival of Miss Vermilion and her lovely maids of honor, representing townships, towns, organizations, and the Chicago and Eastern Illinois Railroad. 49 more young ladies represented the 48 states and the District of Columbia. Wednesday, September 29th, brought more concerts, a speech by Sidell Township native C. Williams, who had served as Attorney General of Colorado, a veterans parade, a parade featuring students from schools throughout the county, and again, the historical pageant. The centennial celebration closed on Thursday, September 30th. That busy day featured more concerts, speeches by John Walker, president of the Illinois Federation of Labor, and Edwin Meredith, former U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, plus the inspection of 4 historic site plaques and the historical pageant. The centennial book, which was sold throughout the celebration, was filled with ads, plus an 18-page essay titled The Genesis of Old Vermilion, 1826 to 1926, by Clint Clay Tilton, a former newspaper publisher and well-known authority on Abraham Lincoln. Tilton was a sprightly writer, and his history included some interesting Vermilion County statistics from 1925. At that time, there were 89,947 residents, 3,587 farms, 5.2 million bushels of corn produced, 19,860 horses, 2,160 mules, 12,900 milking cows, 63,805 hogs, 227 miles of paved roads outside Danville, 7 trunk line railroads, 12,657 automobiles, 247 schools, including 174 one-room country grade schools, and 19 high schools with a total of 3,287 students. Tilton, whose ancestors were early settlers, marveled at just how far the people of Vermilion County had come in just 100 years. He concluded with this, "Oh, hum, these tales of the pioneer days certainly are gripping, but the figures about conditions now do make one sleepy. Better go out and see that the car is safely locked in the garage, then come in and shut off the steam, cut out the radio, turn out the light, and get to bed. Want to get up early, finish the morning paper, and do some telephoning before the mailman comes. Good night." Again, that column came to us today from Kevin Cullen. Well, we do have another editorial right along those historical themes. So this one is entitled, Celebrate American History. The start of February marks the observance of Black History Month, a time for us to consider the contributions made to America by African Americans, both enslaved and free. For more than 400 years, African Americans wore the chains of slavery until the Civil War. Oppression and prejudice continued for decades afterward and continues today. Some people in a position of authority want to homogenize American history to make it sing with a single voice, but history is a chorus of many that can't be silenced. Many want only one version of history, one that makes them comfortable. History, however, isn't always comfortable. It can be just as ugly as it can be inspiring, and all of it plays a part in who we are today as a nation. An exhibit at the Vermilion County Museum at 116 North Gilbert Street in Danville illustrates the importance of understanding everyone's history. Journey of Freedom lays out the struggle of enslaved people who longed to be free and of those who helped them in many ways, one of which was known as the Underground Railroad. Runaway slaves were hidden from authorities as they made their way north toward freedom. The exhibit will be on display through March 28th. Vermilion County was a stop on the Underground Railroad, not surprising considering the number of Quakers in the southern part of the county during the mid-1800s. Those who helped enslaved people escape took great risks to do so, believing that all people deserve to be free regardless of what the laws might require. Black History Month is celebrated in February because the month includes the birthdays of President Abraham Lincoln, a frequent visitor to Vermilion County when he practiced law, and former slave and abolitionist Frederick Douglass. Visitors to the Vermilion County Museum can see Lincoln artifacts and follow a trail of local markers noting significant sites in Lincoln's history in the county. The museum will be open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. with free admission as part of its annual Lincoln Weekend. The Lincoln Birthday Open House will be 1:30 to 4 p.m. on February 8th with free refreshments. The museum's regular hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Tuesday through Saturday. Regular admission is $5 for adults, with children 17 and under admitted free. The cost is $7 for adults if they want to include the adjacent Fithian House, a place where Lincoln often stayed and from which he made a speech from the second floor balcony. David McCullough, the late noted historian and writer, spoke of the importance of everyone's history during a 1991 speech to the National Preservation Conference. "We will need people who understand that history is a spacious realm. There must be no walls. Nothing happens in isolation. Never has, never will. Our picture of the past continues almost daily, where the spotlight for so very long has been only on a few people, a relatively few people, male, white Americans. The lights on the stage are coming up, and all of those people who have been on the stage all of the time are now in the light and in focus. We see how many there are, how diverse they are, and how greatly they have made what we call American civilization. People can ignore parts of our history, hide it away, and promote a single version of what they consider to be reality, but history cannot be erased. It stands there always, with truth as its armor. Celebrating Black History Month honors those who've helped and helped make America great. Their voices deserve to be heard." And that article came to us on the editorial page by the Commercial News Editorial Board. Well, let's make our way to sports and see what's going on in the local roundup, where Bismarck handing eighth graders to play at state. This came to us from reporter Marvin Holman, Dateline Bismarck. The Bismarck Henning Junior High 8th grade basketball team will be going somewhere it hasn't gone in over 40 years today. The Blue Devils will play in their first IESA state tournament since 1983 when they take on East St. Louis Lincoln in the quarterfinal round of the Class 8-3A championships at Unity High School in Tolono at 1 p.m. Bismarck Henning has a 22-1 record going into the game and has won county conference, Topper Classic, regional, and sectional titles this season. If the Blue Devils win again, win against East St. Louis Lincoln, they'll be in a semifinal against either LaGrange Highlands and Lansing Heritage at 6:30 p.m. In other Prep Boys basketball, Westerville beat Hoopston Area by the score of 58-35. It was Covington 52, Fountain Central 44, La Salle 70, on Georgetown Ridge Farm 8. In girls prep basketball, Westville 40, Schlarman 39, Riverton Park 40, North Vermilion 39, Seeker 58, North Montgomery 38, and Salt Fork 51 over Oakwood with 26. Those were some sports from our local basketball scene in the past few days. In college hoops, Jaguars turned away by Eagles. Dak loses second straight. This too comes to us from Marvin Holman. The Danville Area Community College men's basketball team has had a tough week so far. The Jaguars' 16-game win streak ended on Saturday against Rinn Lake, and on Thursday they welcomed Rock Valley College in a non-conference action. Dak fought to overtime with the Golden Eagles, but Rock Valley outgunned the Jaguars at the end for an 87-72 win at Mary Miller Gym. Jaguars coach Dewan Jard said two things held back the team, turnovers and missed free throws. We had 20 turnovers and they scored 29 points off of the turnovers, and that doesn't help you win basketball games, Goward said. And we missed 12 points with the missed free throws, so that got us in the butt. The Golden Eagles didn't help matters because of their shooting. Rock Valley shot 43 pointers and only had 9 turnovers. They shot 43s out of 61 shots, so they were like no other team that we played, Goward said. That's not typical, but that's how they play, and if you shoot 40 of them, you're going to make some. We didn't do a good job of getting to them when they shot, but it wasn't the 15 three-pointers they made. It was the 20 turnovers and 12 missed free throws that cost us. Along with the turnovers and free throws, there were easy shots near the basket that Dak missed that also could have been turned around the game or ended it in regulation. Our big fella, Danzel Antawai, was 0 for 6 from the field, and there were some other guys who missed layups and dunk attempts, Goward said. We lost by 12, so we had the missed free throws, and if we'd only had the 12 turnovers, we had a game. We would have had 8 more possessions. At 43% shooting, we're talking about 25 to 30 points we left on the board. If it's in, it is the game of basketball, but if you leave the points on the board, it's tough to win. Jeremy Wilson left the Jaguars with 19 points and 9 rebounds, but had a technical foul late in regulation. While Rock Valley's Jamarin Redis missed the free throws, he would get redemption in the following possession with a three-pointer to tie the game. He was playing phenomenal, but you can't be a head case on my basketball team and continue to play, Goward said. You're going to do things the right way, or you're going to sit down, even if it costs us the game. And that's what's going to happen every single time. They have to understand it. They have to lock in and do things the right way consistently and not what they feel like. Well, we're going to reach out our best wishes to Dak as they turn this around. Number 5, Illinois, wins 12 straight. This comes to us from the Associated Press. Andre Stojovic scored 17 points, and number 5, Illinois, made 17 three-pointers in an 84-44 win over Northwestern on Wednesday night. Keaton Wagler, Zvonimir Ivasic, and Ben Humrikas each had 13 points for Illinois, which won its 12th straight game, with David Mirkovic also having 12 points, and Tomislav Ivasic had 12 rebounds. 6 players made threes for Illinois, which shot 17-38 from behind the arc. Lots going well for the Illini. We'll continue to wish them well. As I read this to you, I'm reading on Sunday, and today's the Super Bowl. Seahawks-Patriots ready to battle. Nobody on the Seattle Seahawks has supported Sam Darnold quite like Ernest Jones IV. When Darnold threw 4 interceptions against the Los Angeles Rams in a 21-19 loss in Week 11, Jones had his quarterback's back. The second team All-Pro linebacker wouldn't allow Darnold to take the blame. Sam's been balling, Jones said after the game. If we want to try and define Sam by that game, man, Sam had us in every game. So for him to sit there and say, yep, that's my fault, no, it's not. There were plays defensively we could have made, plays or opportunities we could have gotten stops. This is football. He's our quarterback, and we've got his back. Well, Darnold and the Seahawks face Drake May and the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl today in a rematch from 11 years ago. We are running out of time. We're all going to have to hang together and remember what happened in this game. So this has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a great day.